Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. The United Nations declared today International Migrants Day, and the theme is Migration with Dignity. It comes as close to 3,400 migrants have lost their lives traveling worldwide this year. Among those was a 7-year-old Guatemalan child who died in U.S. custody last week as her family attempted to cross the border. For Miami Archbishop Thomas Wensky, the issue hits close to home. For more than four decades, Wensky has worked closely with South Florida's immigrant community, and he speaks both Spanish and Creole directly to his congregants. He regularly makes trips to Latin America and Haiti to deliver mass and religious services. Earlier this year, he went to Congress, along with several El Salvadorian ministers, to advocate on behalf of temporary protected status holders, or TPS. Now, the Trump administration has removed temporary protected status for thousands of immigrants from six different countries, including El Salvador. Archbishop Wensky joins us now in studio to talk about these issues and more. Also, it's the celebration. It's celebrating its 60th anniversary. The Archdiocese is. And so he's here to chat with us. Archbishop Wensky, such a pleasure. Thanks again.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Let's start with this. It's National Migrant Day. Migration with Dignity. And it can carry a lot of different meanings. But when you think about U.S. immigration policy as it is today, as it stands now, what are some of the things that you think about most? What do we need to be focusing on?
Well, I think, first of all, we have to fix a broken system, because the system is broke because it denies hope to a large percentage of the population of those that are already here in this country in irregular status, those who are waiting outside the country to come here legally, and their relatives on both sides of the border that are in suspension waiting for some type of resolution. So our immigration system is broken. And what we're seeing are different manifestations of this brokenness when we see people caught into detention facilities. Right now, there's about 40,000 people in detention in the United States, throughout the United States. Here in South Florida, in Homestead, at the Air Force Base there, there's about 2,000 young people, unaccompanied minors, who are being held there in detention as they work their way through the system. Hopefully, many, if not most of them, will be allowed to rejoin relatives already in the United States. Some will inevitably be deported.
You talk about fixing a broken system. What does that look like? How do we fix it?
Well, I think there would be three things that would be one way to, that would go a long way about fixing the system. One is that we have about 10 to 12 million people in the country already that are here in irregular status. Some came here legally, and their legal status, whether it was a student visa or a tourist visa, lapsed, and they stayed. Other people were able to get here crossing the border without a passport, without a visa. But 10 or 12 million people, and some of them have been here for decades, and they've put down roots, and they've had American citizen children, et cetera, et cetera. Well, one way to fix the system would be to give these people a path to citizenship so they could come out of the shadows and that they could become integrated into American society and become full participants in our society. The next thing that would be helpful to fix the system is to fix the long backlogs in family unification visas. For example, if you're coming from the Philippines, or if you're a legal resident or from the Philippines, or a legal resident from Mexico, and you have a child or a spouse in Mexico and Philippines, and you want to apply for them to come legally to join you here in the country, in this country, you might have to wait 10 years before the paperwork can get processed and that person can join you. Well, that's a tremendous incentive to come ahead of the line and to come illegally. And that's what's happening, because people want to be together with their loved ones.
You know, we come back to this thing, though. You know, so there are basic steps we can take to fix the system. And there are a lot of issues, and this has been debated for a long time now. But you know of this, there's a vitriol, there's an anger, there's, you know, just this sense right now of like a lot of people, and it's been used in politics a lot, that no, these folks are coming in illegally and they don't belong, and so they should be sent back. How do you deal with that?
Well, this anger is not only here in the United States. We see this expressed
all over
throughout
the world. Yes.
Throughout the world, in South America, and in Europe, in Asia as well. And a lot of that is, the result of playing on people's fears, and the fear of the stranger is an easy button to push, and it serves as a distraction from other issues oftentimes. But I think we have to understand that we do not need to fear the foreigner. And right now here in the United States, and there's a third thing I was going to mention,
yes,
about fixing our immigration system, and that would be to provide for a legal, if temporary, a workforce for people in agriculture and other parts of the country, because that's another place where jobs are going unfulfilled, because we don't have a system that allows employers here to bring people that can work here legally, if even for temporarily. But so fixing the system. Right now in the United States, we have almost zero unemployment. And right now we have jobs that are going wanting in agriculture, in the service industry, in construction, et cetera. So we need workers. And where are we going to get these workers from? We're going to get these workers from immigrants.
Something you just said, interesting, and this gives me an opportunity to move into this other issue. We talk about temporary protected status, and as you mentioned, you pointed out that, you know, this the anger people have towards immigrants is worldwide. Let's take a look, for example, in Chile. And you have, you know, all the work that you've done in the Haitian community, you know that there are a lot of Haitians now going to Chile because they've lost their TPS here in the United States. I want to ask you about that. But they're going to Chile, and that's also now caused attention there, because they're like, well, now we have all these people coming in, and they don't want them there necessarily.
Well, I was in Chile about 3 weeks ago, and I went down to Chile. I spent 5 days there, and during those 5 days, I was accompanied by people from the Catholic Church in Chile. And I visited several Haitian communities. I celebrated Mass in Creole. I gave a quick course to some of the Chilean priests of how they could celebrate Mass in Creole. I also celebrated Mass for a group of Venezuelan immigrants in Chile.
Because they're also going to Chile, yes.
And Chile has received immigrants in the past from Peru and from Colombia, but most recently from Venezuela and from Haiti. There's an estimate of about 100,000 Haitians that have gone to Chile, not from the United States, but from directly from Haiti. I was in Haiti last year, and in the airport, there was a special section of the airport that was roped off for travelers that were taking charter flights into Chile. And Chile apparently at that time had a very easy way of access. It was relatively easy to get a visa to go to Chile. There's been a change of government, and so that access has been sort of shut down. But the Haitians are some of the Chilean government was offering them free flights back to Haiti if they promised not to come back for 9 years.
They were offering them, yeah, we'll pay you to go back. Just don't come. I mean, at least for 9 years, don't
right.
come back.
But most of the Haitians are not taking them up on that. And they're finding jobs in different areas. They're only been there about a year and a half. So many of them are still struggling to master the Spanish language. And those that have learned Spanish quicker are rising quicker in the getting better jobs, et cetera. But the Haitians will do as well in Chile as I think they've done here in the United States if given the opportunity.
And what about, you look at the Haitians here in South Florida especially, but in the United States, they've lost their TPS, and that is running out.
Right. Well, again, we have probably close to 1 million Haitians in the United States, and we're only talking about 60,000 Haitians that benefited from TPS after the earthquake in 2010. And it was the decision of the Trump administration not to renew TPS for the Haitians, but also for the Salvadorians, the Hondurans, and a number of of Nicaraguans and some other people from African countries. The TPS is an interesting thing. The TPS was developed in the early 90s as a way to address what do we do with people that are in the United States in a situation where the circumstances of their country change that they cannot go back safely.
When you talk to any of the folks, any of the Haitian folks at your churches, they're concerned about having to go back or what to do next. What are you telling them?
Well, many of them, I'm telling them to keep hoping, because I think the political process is still in play, and that the solution has to be a political solution. And the key to that solution is in Congress. Of course, the courts have delayed the day of reckoning, because the courts have told the administration that that the deadline for the ending of TPS has been put into abeyance, and so there will be some court fights, but the solution has to be legislative. But I'm telling the TPS holders that they need to access some good attorneys, because there's a lot of bad legal advice being given out there by people that are not qualified. But we're finding, and for example, Catholic Charities Legal Services has 28 lawyers that see about 2,000 people every month here in Miami,
and we've had them on the program,
and they tell us that about 20%, maybe 10 to 20% of the TPS holders might have another avenue for a solution of their immigration status. So anyone that has a TPS status, they should see a lawyer to see if there's another way that they can adjust their status,
right,
and not wait for the deadline to come.
And you talk about Congress. We had recently on the program, we had Donna Shalala, the congresswoman-elect in Miami-Dade. This is what she said about TPS holders.
This is going to require Congress paying attention to this issue. Obviously, there's an executive order here. But Congress can pay attention to the issue. And those of us from South Florida are very focused on the extension of TPS for all of the groups that are involved, and new extensions for Venezuelan and Nicaraguans in particular.
So I saw Donna Shalala this morning, and I reminded her about fixing TPS. and actually in Congress there was a congressman, I think it might have been Menendez of New Jersey, that suggested that we give TPS for Venezuelans. And that might be a solution, but as we're finding out with the Haitians and the Salvadorians that have TPS, it might not be a permanent solution, and we have to find a permanent solution. And that has to be done through Congress. A few months ago when Attorney General Sessions announced a zero tolerance policy towards immigrants that were crossing the border with their children and were separating the children from their parents, there was a huge outcry from around the country, and that policy had to be stopped. And the administration promised to reunite the families immediately. It took them a while to do it, but I think for the most part that's been done. However, think about that. That was a huge outcry on behalf of people that had been in the country for a matter of hours, and they were separated from their children. With TPS, for example, you have Salvadorians and Hondurans that have had TPS for almost 20 years. You have had Haitians that have had TPS for 8 years, going on 9 years. And these people, many of them, time didn't stand still for them. So they've worked in this country. They've gotten married. They've had kids. So they have, many of them have U.S. Citizen spouses. They have kids that are U.S. citizens.
Yeah, they have businesses.
And they have businesses. Yeah. And they're working. And they're working in an economy that is needing more workers. And so, if you had a huge outcry of separating families from their kids, of families that had been in the United States just for a couple hours, think of the outcry that would be had if the United States seriously tried to return perhaps a 500,000 TPS holders across the country, breaking up their families, taking them from their jobs, their homes, and trying to send them back to a country that they've been out of for for 10 years or 20 years. You know, people say send them back home. Well, there is no home there. Home is here for them.
We're talking with Miami Archbishop Thomas Wenske. He has worked in South Florida across various parishes for more than 40 years. He's dedicated much of his life to supporting the migrant communities living in South Florida. He speaks Creole and Spanish directly to his congregants. The Archdiocese of Miami, by the way, celebrating its 60th anniversary this year. You know, it's interesting you say that about the outcry when we saw those images and the videos and the stories about the kids being detained and separated from their families. Then we saw this thousands of people, the caravan, as they like, as politicians were calling it, trying to get in, seeking asylum in the United States. Now, many of them are in a camp in Mexico, still near the border, still seeking that asylum. It's become very politicized. What do you think is going to happen to these folks?
Well, I think some of them will make their asylum applications, and probably most of them will not succeed in winning asylum. Some will get discouraged and go back home. Others might settle in Mexico. In fact, in Tijuana, there's about 2,000 Haitians that have basically settled in Tijuana because they figured that there's no possibility for them to cross the border and to be able to to build a future here. So now, you know, the caravan is certainly something that's gotten a lot of publicity, a lot of attention. But when we add up the numbers, there are fewer migrants attempting to cross the border in this past year than there have been in previous years. So it's, you know, this is not an invasion that we have to be very fearful that we're losing control of the borders, because we've had situations that are even more acute in past years, and we've been able to finesse it fairly well. That this is a huge country of 360 million people, so a few thousand at the border is inconsequential.
Just real briefly, because you've been in this issue for, again, as I said, decades.
Right.
What have you seen change in attitudes? Is it worse now than it's ever been?
Well, I was talking to some people yesterday about this, and I said, remember how Miami was in 1980, 1981, 1982? We were faced with the Mariel boat lift, and at the same time, we had thousands of Haitians arriving on our shores. I think it was Time magazine, or maybe it was Newsweek, that put us on the cover saying Paradise Lost. And at that time, there was a lot of anti-immigrant sentiment here in Miami. Cubans that had come in the 60s were surprised in 1981 or 1982 to feel anti-Cuban sentiment from their American or Anglo neighbors, because before they never felt that, but because of Mariel, the attitudes had changed. So we had a very ugly couple years, but Miami was able to digest this and work through it, and because we worked through it, we're a better community than we were then. Miami has become, very cosmopolitan. It's the happening place to be. And in many ways, Miami is the future of the United States, or it could be the future of the United States, because Miami is a test case saying that immigrants can come, and even when they come in great numbers, they represent more an opportunity than they do a threat, and that we and the American culture and the American economy is such that we can absorb them, and we can take advantage of their potential and make something better. So Miami is a better community today than it was 30 years ago, and that's partly because of the drive of the immigrants. So Miami should be the city of the future. And what has happened here in Miami successfully could happen in other parts of the United States if we wanted to.
I can't let you go without asking you. So as I mentioned, this is the 60th anniversary of the Archdiocese of Miami. And when you look back, how do you describe that time and how it's grown?
Well, it's a time of tremendous growth. In 1940, I think Miami was 28th in population of the United States, of the states, of the then 48 states. By 1960, 2 years after the Archdiocese of Miami was established, I think Florida was number 10 in population. Now we're number 3, surpassing New York. So this has, you know, for the past 60, 70 years, we've experienced in South Florida tremendous growth, and the church has grown along with the South Florida community. The Diocese of Miami was established in October 1958. A few months later, we had the Cuban Revolution, and the numbers of Cuban refugees that came down came across here, and the diocese was ready to receive them. And actually, the Archdiocese, or the Diocese of Miami at that time, was ahead of the federal government in responding to the influx of Cuban refugees, and we've continued to do that with other waves. In the 80s, it was the Marielle, then the Haitians, then in the late 80s, the Nicaraguans, the 90s, the Nicaraguans, the Colombians, and now the Venezuelans. And responding to that growth has been, you know, a real challenge, but again, is a blessing.
And real quickly, is what how are you going to be celebrating it? How is the church celebrating it?
Well, we celebrated it in different ways. A couple months ago, we had a gala at the Marlins Stadium that we, you know, used as a fundraiser to help endow our seminarians' education. We had a family style picnic in one of our parishes where we had a battle of bands of different. Teenage gospel bands. We've had a few weeks ago, we had a welcome weekend where we asked parishioners to invite somebody and bring them to church with them. We've had in our Catholic newspaper a reprise of articles over the time in history. We had a ceremony in the cathedral where we honored two distinguished parishioners from each parish. So we've been doing a lot of things.
A lot to celebrate. But then again, 60 years to celebrate, so a lot to celebrate.
And you know, in a church that's almost 2,000 years old, that's not too much time.
Well, but there you go.
Here in South Florida, where everything was built the day before yesterday, 60 years is certainly something to celebrate.
Miami Archbishop Thomas Wenske again joining us, talking about, because as we mentioned, you know, today is International Migrant Day. And again, as we said, the Archdiocese celebrating its 60th anniversary. Archbishop Wenske, always a pleasure. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Still to come, we're going to take a look at the best and, well, worst books. Why not? Of 2018. That's coming up next.